LinkedIn News.
From the news team at LinkedIn, I'm Jesse Hempel, and this is Hello Monday. It's our show about the changing nature of work and how that work is changing all of us. Sit through any performance evaluation, and inevitably, as promotion decisions are made, managers ask the question, does he have executive presence? Is she visible enough throughout the organization? We all know that if you want to have more influence and more impact within a big company or out in the world, whatever it is you do, it's not enough to put your head down and grind. Inevitably, you'll be evaluated as much for what people notice about your work as for the work itself. So today, we launch a series that I'm calling How to Be Unforgettable. In the next two episodes, our guests will coach us on a very important question. How do you make sure that people know who you are? More after this.
The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by Alumni Ventures. Invest with confidence. Discover the power of venture investing with Alumni Ventures, America's largest venture firm for individual investors. Learn more at av.vc.
Okay, so if you want to show up, you have to make yourself heard. Today's guest is Elaine Lynn Herring. She's a graduate of Harvard Law School, where she also spent time lecturing. And Elaine works with people to build communication skills, to help with collaboration, and to help people manage conflict. Elaine's new book is called Unlearning Silence: How to Speak Your Mind, Unleash Talent, and Live More Fully. In our conversation, she'll dig into the reasons why so many of us are scared to speak up. We'll talk about voice and what it means well beyond speech, and Elaine will draw on that Harvard Law School negotiating experience to share practical tips. You know, silence isn't a natural state. Some of us learn to keep quiet, to retreat, very early on. I began by asking Elaine where we learn this. She had a better question.
I think the better question is, where don't we learn to be silent? So in our families of origin, not to link everything back to our families of origin, but it is so deeply rooted in there. Yeah. I am the youngest daughter of a family that immigrated from Taiwan to the United States when I was 10 months old. In my culture, to be respectful of my elders means to listen to them, means to comply, means not to ask questions because you're supposed to trust.
Yeah.
What does all of that mean? You stay silent. You nod. You smile, but not too much.
Right.
And that serves you really well for many of the structures in life. Because in school, if you are quiet, but not too quiet, you follow the rules. You are a good student. You are rewarded for that. You get the good grades. You go into another system called work. And entry-level workers, they're really good busy bees. And even better if you can be a perfectionist at that, because it makes everyone else's life easier.
Yeah.
And then you're told, but to get promoted, you have to speak up. You have to show up. You're supposed to bring your authentic self. And you're like, well, A, that doesn't work for people like me. B, who am I?
Right.
C, do I even have a voice? And then the little voice in my head is like, oh, shit, I'm a grown person and I don't know who I am. I don't have time for an existential crisis. I need to hit that deadline tonight.
I feel like so many people have said to me over the years, not just in this workplace, but in workplaces in general where I've worked, I don't feel comfortable talking about myself. I just want to do the work. I want to do the work, and I want the world around me to notice that I have done the work. And while that is aspirationally on target, it's actually not the way that people gain authority in an environment, right?
It's not usually how people gain authority. And I say usually because that's one of the things I want to shift. Yes, we need to learn how to talk about ourselves. And there's so many layers to unpack as to why we don't want to talk about ourselves, why that's deeply uncomfortable. And we can go there. So I'll signpost that.
Yeah.
And I want each of us to lend our social capital to promote and amplify other people. So there's not a single point of failure if I'm not promoting myself every day. And if we're each doing that for each other, it takes the pressure off of each of us. But it comes from a fundamental understanding that your success does not diminish my success.
Yeah, if you could just say that again, please.
Your success, Jesse winning, does not mean Elaine does not win.
That sort of everyone wins mentality is fundamental to the kind of culture in which all people can thrive. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't necessarily come naturally in many environments where we work, does it?
Not at all. And let's talk about why, which is if we are two women on track to be promoted within the same organization and there is one spot, actually take gender out of it, right? Two people. And there is one spot. It feels zero sum. Either you get it or I get it, or they hire someone externally and they screw us both over.
Right. Right.
So it does feel zero sum if we're all trying to fit ourselves into this one box of what success and life looks like.
Yeah.
So there's another piece of how do we unlearn the ways that we might have silenced both our unique skill sets, but our unique desires. Of what does success look like for you? What would thriving look like for you? By nature of us being different human beings, our version of thriving is going to look different. You may want to go jump out of an airplane and that thrill is going to keep you going for weeks on end. That is the last thing I want to do. Give
right.
me a good book, cup of tea, no danger.
Well, we're all so different in what we actually aspire to, right? And I think that's what you're getting at. Here, I always think about like when I was a young reporter, young business reporter, just starting out at Business Week, and I was one of just a handful of young women on a staff that was more male than female. Mm. And there were a couple of young people, and I was one of them, and we would write the little briefs at the front of the magazine. And mine were never getting in. I would pitch them, and they would just never get in, Elaine. No, my ideas just, like, they didn't work.
Mm.
And I was sitting next to this guy, Brian Hindo. Brian, wherever you are in the world, take this with the spirit of grace in which I mean it. Brian could do no wrong. Brian was interested in cars, and he would pitch business stories about the cars, and they would get into the front of the magazine over and over and over again. And so I would try to pitch business stories about cars. Now, granted, I don't care about cars at all, Elaine, and it wouldn't work. And finally, a good friend who cared a lot about me sat me down and said, Jesse, if they wanted to hire two Bryans, they would have hired two Bryans.
Mm-hmm.
They hired a Brian and a Jesse. So you need to go figure out what Jesse has to say and say that. And that is when my stories started getting in the magazine.
Yes, you can be a good or even great imitation of someone else, or you can be beautiful, fantastic, unique you.
Right. And I would posit that being that imitation of someone else is actually just a way in which we silence ourselves.
Completely.
Right.
And how we're talking about how we learn the silence, I don't think we try to be the Brian of the world because we inherently want to. It's because we see the outcome or because people have told us you should be like this person, be more like them, because then you will succeed because fill in the blank reason. But do we internalize that message? How do we internalize that message? And what of those messages do we want to shed?
Yeah. And that to me is where your book has something really important to impart. Now, you spend the first half of your book really taking us deep into examining where our biases come from and where our fear around speaking out in any way comes from. And here I want to stop a second and just say, like, when you talk about voice, you're talking about capital V voice, not just what I have to say at a table, but the aspects that animate me and the freedom that I have to express those aspects and the authority with which I can convey them, right?
Completely. Voice is not just the words that we say in a meeting. Voice is how we move through the world, right? The things that make me tick, the things that bring me to life, the things that I can see that no one else can see, and the connections that I can make. The impact I can make.
If only you feel confident in leaning into that voice. And so this brings us really to the second part of your book. I want to talk about the action here. If we understand that we can grow in this space, that we can, in all of us, no matter where you are on your voice journey, you can grow into your voice more and have more power through your voice. Where do we begin?
There's a warning in the book that says, for those of you who want to skip over the first five chapters because you're action-oriented like me, please don't do it. You need some context. So let's go to the action because this is the great joy. Where do you start? Start with interrogating your assumptions about voice. Do you believe you have a voice? If you don't believe that, there's a chapter for you on how to find your voice. And that starts with small experiments, and that starts with asking yourself two simple questions. What do I think? What do I need? Because for those of us who are acculturated to solving for everyone else's needs but our own, yes, parents of young children, you're in this category. What do I need is not a question that gets asked by anyone else usually, or even by ourselves. So what do I need? Do I need a snack? Right? I'm packing snacks for my kid. Why don't I pack myself snacks? I get hangry too.
That's the truth.
Yeah. And what do I think? Do I have an opinion of my own? Not what does my manager think? Not what does the company want me to say? Not what would my mother have me do? But what do I think? And those are internal thoughts that no one else needs to know that you are doing this because it can feel a little subversive, but it's internal work that helps us realize, oh, I do have a voice.
Yeah.
I do have thoughts and needs of my own. And then questions of how do you communicate that? But often for us, if we've been going around the world forgetting that we have a voice of our own, it's that reminder to ourselves, and action actually spills from that mindset and that awareness.
You know, that makes me think about a transition that I think I often see happen in people's careers when they get past the advanced beginner stage of their career and into what I like to think of as the intermediate swim lane of their careers. Mm-hmm. And it's the point at which you realize that you have been listening to what the organization wants from you, and you have been listening to what your manager wants from you. And there's a point at which you ask yourself fundamentally, is this in line with what I want from myself? Is it possible that I want something slightly different? Maybe even in alignment, but slightly different than this. It's a brave question to ask. Many people never get around to asking it. Mm-hmm. But the moment that you begin to ask that question is also a moment when you start to hear your own voice.
And in order to hear that voice and then use that voice is also navigating through the color commentary, your own judgment.
So much.
On, wait, why didn't I do this earlier?
Yeah.
Oh, what does that mean? How does that change my relationship with myself, with my spouse, with my team members, with my career?
Yeah.
And yet, if we don't have those conversations, you either end up with a midlife crisis that boils over, or you live a life that to me is not the life that you could live, living fully.
Right. That midlife crisis, I feel like a lot of our listeners are nodding somewhere saying, yeah, that sounds like me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to be clear, there's nothing wrong with a good midlife crisis. In fact, they're instructive. They're gifts to us.
Completely. And sometimes they catalyze voice, catalyze the conversations with ourselves, with the people around us that we need to have.
We're going to take a quick break here. More with Elaine Lynn Herring in just a moment. And if you're enjoying the show, make sure to sign up for our weekly newsletter delivered to your inbox on Monday mornings at linkedin.com/hellomonday. That's linkedin.com/hellomonday. And we're back. So we want to be unforgettable, which means speaking up. But we also have to figure out how to reach people in ways that make sense to them, that mean that we will actually be heard. Elaine brings us advice on how to decode communication styles.
There are two moves here that are completely underutilized by most of the human population. One is noticing that there's a difference between the substance of what we're talking about and the process of how we're talking about it. So in the book, I term these the three levers of voice. The third lever is relationship. most of us start trying to have the conversation without negotiating how we're going to have the conversation. And that process piece of, let's exchange Slack messages, or I'm going to name the question in this meeting, but I don't want anyone to answer it for a week because I want those people who post-process to have an equal shot at bringing forth those thoughts. Landing on a process for the conversation, a process that serves us, a process, a how we're having this conversation that plays to our strengths and lowers the barriers of entry to the conversation for us. Which takes me to the second point, which is if we do not actively design the ways that we communicate, we default to communication patterns that usually center the people who have the most institutional organizational power, or who were just here first. And whether that is neurodiversity, whether that is wiring of any sort, we are all different human beings. Therefore, we have different strengths and we communicate more effectively in different ways. So how do we optimize for voice? Why do we prioritize real-time conversation in three succinct bullet points over Slack messages and asynchronous communication that can leverage and unleash talent globally and also across all different types of wiring? Can we design so that it's not just the loudest voices that are heard or the loudest ideas that are heard, but the best ideas that are heard? And that comes from designing rather than defaulting.
As I listen to you, I think about the ways in which one person always sets the rules for the way their conversation is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And often, most of the time, and granted, it's the role that I'm in, most of the time, I set the explicit rules for what the environment will look like. But then I mirror my guests and allow them to set the rules for the conversation. Now, that works really well in an interview. But in an environment where you are trying to make decisions together, I think it's worth paying attention to the way that you yourself can set some rules around how you communicate.
Either set or influence the rules. And that's that hidden opportunity that most of us are so focused on the tangible substance, the terms and conditions of the agreement, roughly, versus the how.
Say more about that.
If I'm figuring out how to run this project, I'm thinking about budgets. I'm thinking about timelines. I'm thinking about people. I'm not necessarily thinking about what are our communication flows? What are the patterns? And maybe in particularly in tech organizations, you have a TPM, a technical project manager, right, who's shepherding that. In the mediation world that I come from, that is also the role of the mediator to manage the process because people get so caught up in the substance of what we're talking about. Who said what? Who did what? Finger pointing, emotions that we're not looking at. Oh, we've been talking straight for 4 hours. You need a break.
Yeah.
So it's an underutilized opportunity that actually can profoundly support voice, my voice and your voice, if we negotiate the how.
You know, as we're talking about this, so much of it is about relearning patterns. But often these are patterns that we have cemented over the course of decades in our lives. This is your work. Do you see people actually relearn these patterns effectively?
I do. And I will start with myself.
It's a great place to start.
Because I think that's a useful place to start, right?
Yeah.
If I can't do it myself, what am I doing trying to teach other people how to do it or support people doing that? I have been told that writing any book turns you inside out, but writing a book on unlearning silence while trying to unlearn your own silence feels next level. All of the doubts, all the color commentary. You know, I started this process with this observation that the advice that existed in the world around speaking up, around negotiating, around having difficult conversations, giving and receiving feedback, there is some missing piece.
Yeah.
Because the tools and frameworks my colleagues at the Harvard Negotiation Project created seemed sound, but people would pay a lot of money, spend a lot of time, and still not be able to do it. That inquiry led me to silence. What is the silence we have learned that we have so deeply internalized that is subconscious, that we don't have a name for, Right? Silence so often manifests as this discomfort of something's just not right. Why can't I do it? Why can't I be better? And to give language to it to say, we all have a different relationship with silence. Many of us have learned to be silent, silence our needs, silence our thoughts, silence our perspectives, and the people and the systems around us and that we're a part of continue to silence us. So there is work for each of us to do. You yourself are not the problem.
Right.
And so I would say I am a co-journeyer. Is that a phrase?
Yes.
I am on this journey as well.
Yeah.
Of learning that I have a voice, because I spent much of my career, as many of us do, teaching someone else's ideas, building their brands, thinking my only worth came from my affiliation to them, versus I actually have something to offer, something that might be additive.
Right. I think about that here, and I think about the ways in which I silence other people, always without realizing it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not what I aspire to do.
Of course
not. But it is still very true.
Mm-hmm.
And so what are the tools that I can begin to use, not just to become aware of it, to bring my awareness to it, but mm-hmm. to create space in new places?
Mm-hmm. We've talked about one of them already, which is actively designing your communication flows. And if you don't know what makes it easier for the people on your team and around you to use their voice, then ask them.
Yeah.
Literally, hey, Jesse, what makes it easiest for you to share your thoughts?
Yeah.
Because I value what you have to bring. If every manager had that conversation and then took the inputs, outputs from that conversation and actually implemented it, not forever, but in an experiment to see what we can try, how different would our working lives be?
Yeah.
The second that is really tangible is implementing standard questions into your conversations.
Mm.
So as a well-intentioned leader, I want to invite people into the conversation. And so well-intentioned leaders tend to say things like, hey, Jesse, what do you think? Which seems really well-intended. But on the receiving end of that, particularly when there's a power differential, I'm thinking, I don't know, how much does Jesse really want to know?
Yeah.
Can I really tell her? Like, what are the consequences? And you said earlier, if we had more confidence, I'd argue that confidence is part of the equation, courage is part of the equation, but calculation is also a key piece of the equation. So
yeah.
Our roles are in lowering the stakes and lowering the perceived, real and perceived costs of other people using their voices.
Okay.
So these standard questions, instead of saying, what do you think? Saying, what about this works? What about this doesn't work?
Yeah.
What about this plan resonates with you? What about it doesn't resonate? So that you are inviting in dissenting opinions, normalizing that, and also training the people around you that we're going to look at this from different angles. And it's going to be a structured conversation. And every conversation we have about any topic, we're going to be asking these questions because we want to look at things from different perspectives. So we're normalizing different perspectives by the questions that we use.
That was Elaine Lynn Herring. Her brand new book, Unlearning Silence, is available now. Be sure to check it out. As we wrap up week one of our two-part series on how to be unforgettable, Elaine introduces some powerful ideas. First, silence is something many of us learn subconsciously long before we arrive at our first jobs. We have to start here by understanding our own behaviors and assumptions and where they come from. That's how we'll begin to unlearn silence. Second, our voice, it's way more than the words we choose to insert into a conversation. It's how we move through the world. The way we take up space, how people understand us, it's our unique impact. Third, we can intentionally design the process by which our conversations happen. It's just one example. Do they happen in real time or asynchronously on Slack? If we don't take a role in designing this process, it will default to the most comfortable style of the most powerful person on a team every time. But when we do take a role, we have the power to make all conversation more inclusive. Finally, we can use standard questions to take some of the risk out of asking others to speak up. Asking, "What do you think?" offers more risk than questions like, "What about this works for you? What doesn't resonate?" Next Monday, we'll talk with the author Henna Pryor. She wrote the book Good Awkward. It's about getting more comfortable with tripping up in public. Get ready to squirm. That's the point. I hope you'll join us this week for Office Hours. We'll talk about speaking up. So come share your thoughts this Wednesday afternoon at 3 p.m. Eastern. We'll go live from the LinkedIn news page. If you have trouble finding us, email us at hellomonday@linkedin.com and we'll send you a link. Hello Monday is a production of LinkedIn News. Sarah Storm produces our show with help from Lolia Briggs. It's sound designed and engineered by Asaf Gaudron. And this week's episode is mixed by Joe DeGiorgi. Our theme music was composed just for us by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Our contributor, Michaela Greer, has an incredible voice. Enrique Montalvo is our executive producer. Dave Pond is head of news production. Courtney Coop is head of original programming. Dan Roth is the editor-in-chief of LinkedIn. I'm Jesse Hempel. We'll be back next Monday. Thanks for listening.
You saw my eyes go there. What day is it?
What's today again?
Tuesday? Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.